Stand, please.
Case number 10-1300 et al. E.I. DuPont, Demures and Company Petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Suflis for the petitioner, Ms. Fellow for the respondent, and Mr. Ginsburg for the intervener.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Stephen Suflis. I represent DuPont. I wish to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The issue in this case is whether DuPont violated the National Labor Relations Act by making annual nationwide changes to the Beneflex plan and applying those changes to two small bargaining units like everyone else. The only difference is that unlike in past years, at this time in 2004 and 2005, the parties at the two sites were engaged in collective bargaining over the terms of a new contract. We believe the board majority below erred for a number of reasons. I'm going to focus on two of our arguments this morning. First, on the stipulated record, we believe that there was a clear and regular past practice that became a term and condition of employment and thus the status quo that must apply during the time that parties are bargaining over the terms of a new collective bargaining agreement.
Except the board said it wasn't a past. Why aren't we entitled to respect their view? They said it was not a past practice because it did not occur during periods when the contract had expired.
Judge Edwards, the board is not entitled to deference on that decision for two reasons. Number one, the standard of review in this case requires this court to take a closer look where you've got a contrary decision of the administrative law judge and also, in this case, a well-reasoned decision.
No credibility here.
I'm sorry?
No credibility determination.
No, that is true. It's a legal,
standard. A little bit of a look, but if it's credibility, it's a big look.
Correct. And there's no credibility issues here. And also because the board majority here, in reaching the determination they did, ignoring the past practice, issued a decision that's contrary to established board precedent. The board cases, and many of them are unaddressed by the board majority. NLRB precedents make clear that a status quo created by a past practice exists separate and apart from the collective bargaining agreement language under which it arose. That's the Capital Ford case. And the board in Capital Ford, which the board majority in this case didn't even mention.
You've got much better precedent than that.
Yeah.
You've got Friendly Ford says that the mere fact that a past practice was developed under a non-expired contract does not gainsay the existence of the past practice. If it's a past practice under a contract, the board says in that, and then in the Beverly case, they said, you know, then it's a past practice after the contract expires.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Judge. The Ford case has been called a bunch of different names. We called it Capital Ford. It's also
okay.
Ford.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
It's the same case.
Yeah.
And that footnote number three is the one that I am referring to.
Beverly's a different case. And the
Beverly is
Courier, the Providence paper, newspaper case, isn't that what the Courier Journal?
Courier Journal is, I believe, I thought it was out of Kentucky, but
well,
Courier.
The Courier Journal.
Yeah, the Courier Journal cases.
Right. Yeah,
Courier. Correct. The Beverly case that Judge Randolph referred to
Courier
is a
Journal is an opposite. It's a different factual situation, as the board pointed out.
Well, and here's the point, Your Honor, and I believe that the board's seizing on the concept of hiatus to distinguish Courier Journal from these other precedents, EIS break parts, Friendly Capital Ford, whatever we call it, the Beverly case out of the Sixth Circuit. It was an improvident decision for several reasons. Number one, when you read the Courier Journal cases, as you have, there's no indication in those decisions that hiatus was the determinant factor or rationale of the court.
Nothing wrong with an agency saying that's as far as we went and you can't take it any further than that.
That's
their responsibility, not ours. They read that fairly. It does not cover the situation.
I appreciate that.
Okay, so you can't go anywhere with that case, and they've properly put it somewhere. Here, let me get to you the heart of my concern. The problem here goes way back to the old Katz cases and are struggling with trying to understand what the status quo is. And when we're in a situation where the employer says we have absolute discretion or we're resting on a management rights clause. The board has consistently said a management rights clause does not continue past the expiration of the contract, and we and I have said in past cases where you're talking about absolute discretion, we're not going to let you in the CAT situation do whatever you want to do. You may continue to do something, but you have to talk with the union about the something, and you can't say we can do whatever we want to do because we've had discretion under a management rights clause, which lapses when the contract's gone. It's a very tricky argument.
Let me respond.
Let's make sure I understand. So, I thought your argument did not in any way depend on the management rights clause.
That is correct, Judge Ginsburg.
A reservation of rights clause.
Yeah, we are arguing.
Reservation of rights clause. Same thing. As you know, same thing.
I'm not sure that it is, Judge Edwards, because as we pointed out, when parties, as you and experienced labor counsel, talk about management rights clauses, those tend to be general fill a bucket reservations of management rights.
Well, go back to what you know exactly what I'm struggling with. There's a reservation of rights, contractual reservations of rights that you're resting on that's gone when the contract expires.
Well,
to do whatever. Let me just tell you what my concern is.
I don't join with that, but please let me have your concern.
Reservation of rights is what we're resting on. To do whatever we want to do. We have said in cases, and the board has said, first of all, generally those reservations of rights do not last beyond the expiration of the contract. We have also said, where you're talking about absolute discretion, it defies CATS to say you can do what you want after the contract expires and call that the status quo, as opposed to you can continue to act in this area, but you have to negotiate with the union about the details.
Let me respond in a couple of different ways, because we've covered a lot of territory with this. First of all, as on the stipulated record, DuPont's discretion in this case was not unbounded. The discretion was limited. These people, the union people, got the same as everyone else. And in Courier Journal, whether it applies legally or not, the board still observed that that was a substantial limitation, a real limitation on management's rights. The other thing is, as we pointed out in our papers.
Sorry, that was acknowledged where?
That was in the Courier Journal case.
In the context where the contract had not expired.
But that they were not looking at it in that
regard.
But
I mean, that's really not interesting. In Courier, so the contract's in existence. So what? That's not helpful to me here.
Right. Let me say this then, and let me try to get to the nub of what I think is your concern. What the board did here by saying that the past practice here arose during the term of the contract. Therefore, they say it had to have arisen under a management rights clause, and if the management rights clause expires with the contract, then the past practice is extinguished. Number one, it's contrary to board precedent, as Judge Randolph has
already identified. It's exactly the issue in Friendly Ford. That the argument was, since the management rights clause expired, then it didn't matter what the practice was. And the board said, no. The management rights clause, you can't rely on that. But the past practice that grew up under the collective bargaining agreement continues after the bargaining agreement expires. It's directly on point.
Was that an absolute discretion case?
Friendly Ford was an absolute. Well, there is never absolute discretion because
We had the bonus cases. There are lots of cases that we've struggled with historically. I mean, this has been the historical struggle. You can do whatever you want to do now because during the term of the contract you had the discretion to give the bonus or not, and how much or not? We said no.
Well, I think on the issue of discretion. I'm sorry.
Just to follow up on Judge Edwards, it seems to me that if. Because there are dynamic status quo cases where one has to continue the practice, right, that there is some range of discretion. And sometimes the practice is non-discretionary. It's follow the CPI or something like that.
Right.
But in other cases, there's some degree of discretion. It seems to me the problem you've got here is not that the changes were significant, particularly. They were. But it's not that. It's that you're self-insured. You weren't passing through what Blue Cross passed to you.
Well, let me try and address that in a couple of different ways. First, and trying to get back to Judge Edwards' question as well, past practice is defined by the past practice. The board cases and the cases of this court make clear that the practice must be clear, it must be regular, it must be frequent, and most important, it must be similar. And in this case, the changes in 2004 and 2005 were similar. They were of the same nature as prior year's changes. And in fact, in 2004, DuPont added benefits. They added a legal services plan. They improved access and reduced cost of dental.
That makes them dissimilar. Right, that looks like it's conferring benefits.
Well, and that's what happened in prior years as well, Judge Ginsburg. In every year,
there's some ups and some downs. Right?
That's precisely
some
right.
of the price, some benefits or types of service are extended, some are curtailed, premiums are co-payments and so on are adjusted for different categories. It's a mix.
Right, correct. And in terms of the past practice argument, if DuPont were to come in and say, we're going to give everybody $1. That's going to be the health care benefit. That is not similar to the past practice which was established here. The changes in 2004 and 2005 were similar.
So you couldn't eliminate the benefit?
That's a different argument.
Yeah,
but in terms of the past practice, in terms of the past practice argument, under the covered by contract argument, perhaps we could, but I'm leaving that aside for the moment. I'm dealing with the past practice argument right now, the dynamic status quo. So what I'm saying is, so long as the practice is similar, the employer, the discretion is not unbounded, and in this case, on this stipulated record, DuPont acted consistent with its past practice. The other thing that I think is important.
So you're not arguing then the past practices we can do as we see fit.
The answer is it doesn't go that far. We can do as we see fit, consistent with our pledge that you'll be treated the same as everybody else.
Well, and the same as everybody else may mean we're doing nothing.
Well,
but I take it your claim, it's not quite explicit, is that as a practical matter, you couldn't eliminate, let's say, the benefit for the non-union employee.
Under the dynamic status quo theory.
I want to know what your legal argument is, forgetting your practical.
Yeah, that's my legal argument is. My legal argument is that under the dynamic status quo rubric, there must be a continuation of the practice.
So you couldn't eliminate the benefit under your theory?
Not under the dynamic status quo.
But you could eliminate some type of benefit, apparently.
Correct.
Right? You could say no more psychiatric coverage or something.
Correct.
For everybody.
For everybody. Because those kinds of changes were made year in, year out, in all prior years. Here's the other point, Judge Edwards, that I want to make to your question.
I want to make sure we're saying things, because you're hedging nicely, politely, but you're hedging.
Skillfully.
Right. Are you saying you had absolute discretion or not?
Under the dynamic status quo rubric, which we're talking about, that's one of the two theories we're raising. Under that theory, we have the absolute discretion to design the plan, but the end result, the design of the plan, the changes that we are making, must be of a general nature similar to what had occurred before. It can't be specific because we know healthcare changes so radically year to year, and we know in the record that what DuPont tries to do is move benefits around in order to provide these benefits. My other point that I think is really crucial to make, though, is this. I think where the board got it wrong below is two ways. Number one, by saying that the past practice expires with the contract under which it arose, not only leaving aside that it's inconsistent with board precedent.
No, I don't think
that means.
That's not the argument. It's not that the past practice is that you have something that is fully discretionary, you can't look to a reservation of rights to save you. That's what their argument is. Come on, that's the sophisticated argument. It's, of course, if a past practice, if you are allowed a rest break, you'd have to bargain about it before you change it. That's not what this case is about. This case is about the presence or absence of full discretion. And what the board's position, as I read it, is when you're resting on total discretion and a reservation of rights, I thought you were saying we could do whatever we want. That's what it says. That's what the past practice is. We can do what we want to do. You've now moderated that completely.
Well,
you've changed that.
I've made it consistent with the case law. which says past practice, and as on the facts here, similar. Similarity is a component in establishing whether a dynamic status quo has been lawfully applied. But I beg to differ with you.
Your point was simply that if they do something with respect to the union people, they have to do it with respect to the non-union people.
That is true.
That's not total discretion, right?
He's pedaled back from that some. I mean, it's a much more reasonable position now. He's saying that you can't just dish it. This or whatever my son's grandkids was. You can't just
under and again, remember, I've got two theories here. Under the dynamic status quo theory, that would be, if dynamic status quo applies, similarity is a factor of the case.
Okay, now let me just make sure I understand your response to Judge Randolph. You're saying that's the practical constraint, but your legal constraint is the one you've given to Judge Edwards.
That is correct.
Can I just refine this a little bit?
Please.
In the benefit plan itself, it says not only can DuPont modify it also says DuPont can terminate the plan without. Now, once that clause expires, or the collective bargaining agreement expires, the board precedent is you can't rely on that clause anymore. You agree with that?
That's what the majority said in this case.
Right, okay. But you go back to past practice. There's no past practice of DuPont terminating the plan entirely, right? The only past practice is DuPont modifying it for everybody that's covered. And under Friendly Ford and Beverly and these other cases, they held that past practice continues beyond the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement. That's your argument, right?
Precisely.
Okay.
Your modified argument, the dynamic. All right.
Under the status quo.
Maybe it's a modification. I don't know. It's a little additional.
He knows it's a modification.
Additional gloss.
He knows it's a modification.
So could you then switch to outsource your carrier?
Yes.
You could.
Yes.
That would require, quote, terminating the plan, close quote.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that when you read the plan document, it would require changing. When you read the medical plan document, it says we provide these benefits and here's what the copays are. That's in the plan document in the record.
Is this an ERISA plan?
It is an ERISA plan.
I think it's going to be very specific.
I don't believe that you terminate the plan if you decide to go with third-party insurer, because in fact, certain aspects of the Beneflex plan are insured through third parties. Not everything is self-insured. The medical plan is, but there are other aspects of the plan.
Such as what?
I must confess, Your Honor, right now I don't recall, but it's in the record.
That's a non-medical aspect of it.
I believe that they may outsource. Well, I do know, let me correct myself. I do know that in certain geographic areas of the country where employees in rural areas don't have access to the network that DuPont has put together nationwide, DuPont can go out and purchase through a third-party carrier coverage for people in these remote areas because the DuPont program just doesn't get there.
Is the plan, the ERISA plan, the same plan that covers the non-union employees?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. I know I'm way over.
Not just the same terms. It's the same plan.
Correct. Okay. Correct. I know I'm way over time, but can I just speak to one issue? The question that was raised was, does DuPont have the right to completely terminate the plan? Our second legal theory, as set out in our papers, is that under the covered by contract rubric, what the union agreed to here was the Beneflex plan in all its glory, including the reservation of rights. So although we don't have to cross that bridge today, I think the principled answer to the question is, does DuPont have the right to terminate the program entirely? Under our covered by contract argument, the answer would be yes.
It's an oral contract, right?
It is not an oral contract, Your Honor. The contract here exists in the stipulated record. The stipulated record clearly says that the union agreed to the Beneflex plan subject to and aware of and understanding DuPont's reservation of rights and its right to make all these annual changes.
So the cases in which the board says that various provisions of a collective bargaining agreement do not extend beyond the life of the agreement, for example, a no-strike clause, don't apply? Is
that? They don't apply on these facts, Your Honor, because, again, under the covered by contract argument that we are making, the contract is not the collective bargaining agreement. It's an agreement by the union and DuPont to provide Beneflex under these provisions.
Where are you getting that from? The collective bargaining agreement?
No, sir.
Where are you getting from? I know what's in the Beneflex plan.
Yep.
The union signed off on the Beneflex plan?
The stipulation says the union agreed and accepted the plan.
You're arguing two different things now.
Well, yeah, because I've got two different arguments.
I understand the first large argument, but now within your second argument, you're arguing two different things. Where in the collective bargaining agreement did the union sign off on what you're now saying they didn't?
In the collective bargaining agreement.
Which is expired.
The collective bargaining agreement says the union agrees to be bound by the terms and conditions of the Beneflex medical plan,
right.
And it also says the union agrees to be bound by the terms of DuPont's other plans, including plans included in Beneflex, subject to subsequent modification. That's in the collective bargaining agreement. Our argument is that that is a recognition that the union's agreement here was broader. The agreement of the parties was broader. It was an agreement, a contract, if you will, between the parties.
You're relying on the proviso that the board always puts in the management rights clauses don't survive the expiration of the contract unless the parties intend otherwise. And it's the unless the parties intend otherwise that you're relying on.
That is correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
You're adducing a contractual element apart from the CBA.
That's correct.
That exists independently by virtue of a different agreement.
Correct.
That agreement is implicit or found in practice.
In practice, in the stipulation, in the plan document, and in the collective bargaining.
Doesn't that claim stumble on the union's objection each time there's, well, both times there's been a hiatus change?
And your request for that right that you claim you already had.
Well, if I may respond to Judge Ginsburg first. The answer, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the question. I apologize.
You forgot the question?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the answer.
Thank you. From you, I'd appreciate that.
The question is whether you are, in fact, now claiming, adducing that there's a contractual element on which you're relying that exists apart from independent of the CBA. It doesn't depend on the reservation of rights or any of that. It grows solely out of practice and acquiescence, but in fact, there's been non-acquiescence in hiatus periods.
Yeah, I'm not arguing so narrowly. It's not the acquiescence, because in order to have a contract, you have to have mutuality.
Right.
And we believe the mutuality here, as stipulated, was the union accepted the Beneflex plan. That's what the stipulation says.
So it's the stipulation, it's not the practice.
It is
the
but it's the stipulation as informed by the practice, because now look at what the parties did afterwards.
Well, when was the stipulation? I thought that was for litigation.
Well, it is in, I mean, it is the record.
You're sliding so far away. Now, the stipulation is not the contract. The contract says what it says.
Right.
Well, the contract doesn't say that. You're trying to get an incorporation of the plan into the contract that's expired and build up a very new and different theory. I can understand your dynamic status quo argument. I don't understand this one.
Let me respond, Judge Edwards, to the one question you asked. If we had the right, why did we ask for it? That's in the record. At the Edgemore negotiation, at the time that took place, the Louisville unfair labor practice litigation had already begun. And DuPont went to the table and said, we don't want to get sued in Edgemore. Therefore, we want to block future litigation by putting this in. And as the dissent below said, the fact that was then subsequently withdrawn does not denigrate DuPont's otherwise.
Is this a little simpler than maybe we're – is it just the contract's expired but the plan continues? Question, what is the plan? And you're saying the plan includes all the provisions of the plan, including the one that says DuPont can modify it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that would be fine if we weren't in collective bargaining and we didn't have the rules of law that we have, which says if there are terms and conditions of employment in play, you have to negotiate with the union if you're going to make changes.
And
your dynamic status quo argument fits within that law. The answer you just gave Judge Randolph does not.
I'm sorry, I can't join with you on that, Judge Edwards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Solis.
Good morning. I'm Mackenzie Fellow. I represent the National Labor Relations Board, and I'm here today to ask the court to enforce the board's orders in full. When a collective bargaining agreement expires, the terms and conditions of employment remain in place and may not be changed by an employer without bargaining. This is by force of the National Labor Relations Act and not because of any agreement between the parties. The Supreme Court...
What do you do with the dynamic status quo cases?
Well, in those cases, the employer has made changes inside and outside a contract, or the changes that they have made have been so specific that they have become an actual term and condition of employment. Here, a management rights clause is not a term and condition of employment. It's a contractual provision saying the employer can do whatever they want.
It's not really the management. That's not the heart of their argument. Their argument is that under our contractual regime before this contract expired, looking at the contract, we had the right, and everyone understood that we had a contractual right, which you couldn't have prevailed on had you challenged us, to be able to make these national adjustments. And counsel has conceded we have to look to see whether they are uniform and whether they are similar to what we've done. And if they are, then that is very consistent with board law, which is that even when the contract expires, they don't have to negotiate about things that are consistent with the status quo.
Right, but
I mean, they have to negotiate about them, but they can act pursuant to the status quo. I'm sorry.
Right, but when the contract expired, the terms and conditions at that moment are frozen. Now, maybe those terms and conditions were set unilaterally by the employer prior to expiration, pursuant to a management rights clause. So it's not the management rights clause that continues, it's the terms and conditions as set by the employer pursuant to the management rights clause. So the terms and conditions that the employer had set unilaterally about the changes that it had previously made pursuant to the contract about Beneflex, those provisions remained in effect as terms and conditions of employment. The terms and conditions of employment were that the employees received X set of benefits for Y premiums or something like that. Those are terms and conditions of employment. A management rights clause is not a term and condition of employment. It allows an employer to determine the terms and conditions of employment. And that's exactly what Katz said 50 years ago, and that is basically...
Suppose that a collective bargaining agreement says, we'll call it a management rights clause, that the employer shall have the sole right and discretion to determine the system and who gets bonuses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the contract expires. And the contract was in existence 5 years, and the employer did that. I mean, some people got bonuses, some didn't. There was a system set... It was all up to the employer. It wasn't negotiated. The contract expires, and the employer then institutes a productivity bonus system, depending upon how productive the employee is. Is that illegal? Is that a violation of 8A5?
Well, I think you're probably referring to the Capital Ford case.
I am. That's exactly what happened there. Well, and what did the board hold in that case?
The board held that the employer did not violate the act by making changes to the bonus.
Because?
Because the employer had made similar changes in the past.
During the term of the contract?
No. Actually, the new employer took over in May, and the new employer had actually made changes, had instituted bonus incentive programs, I understand, every month, actually, after it took over when there was no contract.
The fact that the past practice was developed under a now expired contract does not prevent the existence of a past practice. That's what the board said, right?
It does say that, but the
fact
that
in Beverly, the board said, without regard to the management rights clause, without regard to whether the management rights clause survived, the respondent, the employer, would be privileged to have made the unilateral changes at issue if the employer's conduct was considered with a pattern of frequent exercise of its right to make unilateral changes during the term of the contract. What did the board do? How did the board distinguish those two cases? And these are not old cases. I mean, these are recent. This is 2004. I forget what Beverly was, but how did the board distinguish those cases?
Well, the ALJ in the decision that the board adopted distinguished Friendly Ford by saying that in that case there was no actual finding that the changes had only been made during a contract.
What about Beverly?
I'm sorry, I can't recall what
the board I think distinguished it at all.
So. In Beverly, though, the board did say that a management rights clause does not survive expiration of a contract.
Yeah, but despite that, the past practice under the contract did.
And that's not surprising, and it's not anti-employer union because the practice may favor the employees. It depends on what it is.
Right.
And so it cuts both ways, and that's why Beverly might have said that, because the employer had always done or allowed or given X and then says the contract has expired, I'm not doing it anymore. The union says you have to bargain about it. They would have to bargain about it.
Right, but if the changes are discretionary, completely discretionary, then there is no status quo. For example, if the employer here had refused to make the changes and the union had somehow insisted, oh, you have to make changes, it's just unclear how the board could possibly find a violation despite the company's claim to the contrary.
Wasn't the merit increase in, I guess, Capital Ford discretionary?
Well, those were bonuses. And the union there had no, had
they
never.
They weren't randomly distributed. They were on the employer's assessment of merit, weren't they?
No. They were product, they were based on sales.
Uh-huh.
So if you made 90% of your sales.
Was it actually formulaic, would you say?
Well, I'm not sure. But in that case, the union had never really objected to any of these.
The productivity bonus was instituted after the contract expired in Capital, Friendly Ford Capital.
Right, and it had the employer.
After the contract expired.
Right. Well, I'd also like to point to the court's attention a case called Gannett Company from 2000, where the board found that an employer did not violate the act by refusing to give discretionary wage increases because the wage increases had always been very subjective. Mm-hmm. There was nothing that the board could point to say you have to, because the company had always just done whatever it wanted. It had said, oh, well, in this case, we think you deserve this raise because of this. And in this case, we think you deserve this raise because of this. And that is at 331 NLRB number 177.
That's consistent with the status quo.
They stopped giving the raises, and the board said it was fine.
But the board said because it was always subject to what the employer preferred to do. That was the benefit. That was all that. The content of the benefit was it's at the whim of the employer. And so if you're not giving it after the contract expires, that's not inconsistent with the benefit.
I'm not sure.
The benefit was it's whatever we're going to give you. That's the content of it.
Right.
So if we're not giving you anything after the contract expires, you haven't done anything that's inconsistent with the status quo.
Right. Okay. Well, I was trying to point out that the employer claimed in his brief that it was somehow obligated to make changes to the Beneflex plan and that it would have violated the law had it not made these changes, and I think that's just completely without
merit. In a belated ERISA argument. Is that what you're talking about, or this is a different argument?
No, in its just general discussion of 885 and past practice, it claims that it would have violated the act if it had not made whatever changes it wanted, and I think
says that there are such cases where the dynamic status quo is obligatory after the expiration. I don't think they were saying that was the case here.
Well, they may have said it if they were saying they had to be uniform throughout
that's
the other angle.
Yeah.
But that's different than whether they had to make
I think that's all they may be saying is that they felt that the practice had been to make it uniform. They did it for everyone else. They did it for these two operations as well.
Okay. Well, I only have a minute left, but I would just like to say that if a new union came in, it would have the right to bargain over these changes. So the company needs to point to something that this union did to indefinitely narrow the scope of bargaining.
Why do you say that so comfortably? I mean, you said that very firmly, but why is that so? If a new union came in and the employer said, for example, use an easy something that we all agree on, the employer is simply acting in a fashion that's perfectly consistent with what the employer has always done. Yes, the union has a right to bargain going forward, but what has the employer done wrong in following the status quo?
Well, the employer is saying that the union had a right to negotiate over what will be in the next contract, but not about any changes that it makes until they come to an agreement. And that could be a very long period of time. And CAT says that when a contract expires, terms and conditions remain in place. And there are many cases saying that about health care benefits.
Nobody, am I missing something here? Nobody's saying the union can't bargain over this.
The employer's saying that.
The contract, no. The contract's expired. If they want to have a different plan, they can keep. The question is what happens in the interim,
right?
Until they reach agreement.
Right.
And the I don't understand your hypothetical then. I mean, I'm with Judge Edwards on that.
You're saying no unilateral change, but that's, but that's the question here.
I think the source of this exchange is that counsel has elided the status quo and a dynamic status quo, and they are distinct.
They are distinct, but the board in this case said that.
In a dynamic case, the employer will continue to make a change in the literal terms, but that's what it's always done, so it's not changing its practice. It's got a bargain going forward.
Certainly.
If the union wants to bargain over, it's a mandatory subject.
Right. And the board here, or the union here, requested bargaining over the changes, and the employer refused.
Now, the union requested bargaining over the changes that had been implemented, right? Not just going forward, not just over next year's changes.
Right. They wanted to bargain over both. They were bargaining over.
This case is not about the employer refusing to bargain going forward.
Right. They were bargaining over what benefits would be in the new contract. What they refused to bargain about was the changes that was going to make in the interim.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Fields.
Okay. Thank you.
Hear from the union.
May it please the court, Matthew Ginsburg on behalf of the United Steelworkers Union. If I may, I just would like to pick up where the conversation has been going. In order for there to be a dynamic status quo, there would have to be a regular and consistent pattern of change under the contract, and here there was no such pattern of change, and there was no way to determine whether the changes that DuPont was making once the contract expired were in any way similar.
It depends on the appropriate level of generality, right? In a CPI case, it's quite obvious,
right?
And in every other case, there's some degree of discretion. So you need to be tell us why this one is somehow over the line.
Well, the board, beyond the CPI cases, have said that in other cases where the employer and the union, for example, agree to a percentage split on the cost of premiums, that if there is a scheduled change to the cost of premiums at a particular time each year, that it would be enough that in the interim that change would be reflected going forward. So if it was a 75-25 split under the contract and the only change was a change to premium, that change might automatically take place outside of.
That sort of sounds a lot like this case in that any change will be applied also to the non-union employees. It's quite similar.
Well, as we discuss in the fact section of our brief, in fact, that representation is not reflected in the record. That was what the understanding was. Nothing in the contract says that. Nothing in the reservation of rights clause says that. And in fact, DuPont advertised to employees that it would make changes from facility to facility depending on the needs and interests of the employees at each facility, and in fact did offer different plans at different facilities depending on those needs and interests. Yet here, where the employees are represented by a collective bargaining agent, they refused to discuss those changes with the collective bargaining agent.
While the contract was still in effect, could the company have canceled the benefit?
We don't think so. The way we read the contract is that there's a contractual agreement to provide benefits, and it's obviously linked to the Beneflex plan. But we think that if...
Is it found in the CBA, or is it found in the benefits documents, plan documents?
Well, the agreement is in the CBA, and obviously it incorporates the plan document.
And the plan document says they can cancel with 1 year's notice.
Yeah.
We think that if, given the agreement in the contract that they will provide, I believe it's the Louisville contract, provide basic medical insurance per the plan documents, that we would have a good arbitration case under the contract. That
per the plan documents and the plan, I mean, we're in a renvoi here.
Well, the plan documents contain.
On arbitration, you argue that would be the baseline. Maybe they threw that out, but they still have to deliver us benefits.
Correct.
That are no less or similar to those. I mean, that would be a strong argument in arbitration if your contract says they're promising you medical benefits. Essentially, you're arguing of the sort that are in the plan. You take the plan away if you want to, but you still got to provide us with medical benefits.
Correct. Yes, sir. That would be our argument.
Can I ask you a factual question? I may have missed this, but we have two plants, Louisville and Edgemore. Are these local unions at each plant? Is that what we have here?
Yes.
And how many other plants does DuPont have where there were local unions?
It's not in the record, but as we describe in the facts section of our brief, there are at least several other plants where there are local unions.
Because several? I mean, what does that mean?
There are several other that we are aware of. My understanding is that there are different unions that represent some of which
it's,
are in.
So it's not just if you prevail and the NLRB is, we have an enforcement, it's not just that the Beneflex plan will be different for union people until a collective bargaining agreement is reached versus non-union people. It's also within the community of union employees, there'll be different benefits plans.
As a factual matter, as we point out in our brief, there have over the course of time been different. The DuPont has treated different units differently.
The answer is yes.
Okay. And in fact, as the ALJ in the Edgemore case pointed out, as to this uniformity point. The company put forth no evidence whatsoever. This is footnote 10 of the ALJ's decision.
Let me just follow up on that because there's something triggered by one of Judge Edwards' questions. Let's suppose that the Beneflex plan that you prevail, okay? And then at the end of a year of negotiation, on January 1st, DuPont decides to raise the benefits. Right? Does it have to raise them for the individuals who are in collective bargaining where the plan has expired or the agreement has expired? Or can it just raise them for the other union people and the individuals who are not covered by a union?
Let me just make sure I understand the hypothetical. So the contract has expired, and in the fall, the employer says we're going to raise benefits for everybody. But for
let me put it this way: despite campaign slogans, change is not always good; it can be bad, right? But if it's good,
one can hope.
If it's good, is this a ratchet effect that the employees get the benefit of the improved plan but don't get the detriment of a?
No, Judge. Our position is it's not a one-way ratchet. The duty of the employer here is to hold the benefits constant. Now, the union could come to the DuPont and say, well, look, you're improving benefits for everybody else. We're in overall bargaining. We'd like you to improve it for us, too, as well. But DuPont would be entitled to say, no, we're not going to bargain against ourselves. We'll wait till overall bargaining to reach an agreement with you on the benefits.
All right. Any questions?
Thank you, Your Honors.
You want to hear from Mr. Surplus again? You need to correct anything that we've heard?
Yes, if I may.
1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just 3 points. Although it's not in the record to respond to Judge Randolph's question, I believe if you do a Lexis search, you'll see that DuPont has unions at dozens of plants. I can't quantify it for you today, but it's certainly more than Edgemore and Louisville. Number two, Mr. Ginsburg said that the Beneflex plan document, he raised the specter that there are lots of other plan options at lots of other places. And I think, as I mentioned on my direct argument, and I think is reflected in Ms. Murray's testimony on the record, to the extent that there are variations from the national plan, it is primarily limited to those areas where there's no access to health care under the big department plan.
We had that point earlier.
All right. And number three, Ms. Fellow concluded by saying, well, what happens if a new union comes in? Well, that was the friendly Capital Ford case. A new union came in, and they were bound by the past practice that had arisen during the predecessor union. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Sifflis. Thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. Case is submitted.
Stand, please.